Ann Arbor is becoming known for a remarkably futuristic technology, the self-driving car. This spring, work is expected to wrap up on a 32-acre driverless town on the outskirts of the city. There, Google and others will be testing vehicles featuring an array of cutting-edge technology. One goal is a driverless vehicle, not only programmed to follow a particular route, but also to avoid all kinds of less predictable developments, mistakes by other drivers, and changes in the road surface and the weather and so on. Our next guest is one of dozens of people involved in the vehicle project. Brandon Shetley recently finished a study that looks at the impact that self-driving vehicles could have. That was a poor choice of words, now wasn't it? Brandon's a project manager at the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute, or UMTREE. Good to have you with us, Brandon. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
I understand there are four different levels of vehicles in this project, and the most advanced, level four, if you will, is the driverless car, no sentient being inside the vehicle. And your study involved that car, the driverless vehicle. What kinds of things were you trying to learn in your study?
Well, the latest study that we did, we were taking kind of an ambitious look at a massive set of data that the U.S. Department of Transportation periodically collects. They look at some detailed information on the travel habits of U.S. citizens. And we took a look at that data to see if we could figure out just how much people in households have trips that overlap or don't overlap, and how much they would possibly be able to use a self-driving vehicle as a sort of shared household vehicle to kind of make all their household trips without people having to have their own individual vehicles to go where they need to go.
I see. And what did you find out?
Pretty drastic finding. Just to kind of describe what's going on currently, right now there's around 32% of households have a car and around 42% have two cars. In the grand scheme of things, it makes up about 2.1 cars per household in the U.S. What we found was that almost 84% of the households that we looked at didn't have overlapping trips, so they would be able to get by with a minimum of one vehicle. As we look at our analysis, it would ultimately drop down to something like 1.2 cars per household. But this is, of course, the most extreme scenario where you've got everybody using self-driving vehicles and everybody is maximizing their ability to share the vehicle, which, of course, is kind of an extreme hypothetical scenario.
That's still amazing. 84%. No overlapping trips, and it, regardless of that fact, despite that fact, these are still households that average more than one vehicle. Do I have that right?
That's right. These were households. To be included, of course, you had to have at least a vehicle. We weren't including in the analysis people who don't have vehicles or strictly use public transportation or other things like that. And so, yeah, included into the study was anyone with one or more vehicles, there was households that had drastically more than one or two vehicles, but like I say, the average was 2.1. And yeah, 83.7 was the number we came up with of households that could get by with a single self-driving vehicle that's able to sort of make return trips to home or to other locations to pick people up and kind of be a shared household vehicle.
Now, does the car ownership projection, does that worry automakers going from 2.1 average cars per household to as low as 1.2? And granted, this was kind of the extreme, as you pointed out. But what do automakers have to say about that? That sounds like a drop in sales.
Sure. Like you say, it is an extreme. I don't personally know exactly what the automakers say. The study is very new. It's only been out for a week or two. But I would say that there's probably not as much reason to be concerned as it might appear, because a drop from 2.1 to 1.2 sounds drastic. But all of the miles that these people are putting on their vehicles every year are now going to be put on that one or let's say 1.2 vehicles. So the average person was putting around 12,000 miles just under on a vehicle every year. This would jump to something like 20,000 vehicle or miles per year. So while the number of vehicles in a household might drop significantly, the number of miles that get put on each vehicle would increase significantly. So you may end up owning fewer vehicles, but potentially having to replace those vehicles much more often.
Now, revisit with us briefly, Brandon, here, the kind of scenario that this conceivably creates here. You're talking about, let's assume, a family of four with a driverless vehicle. How would their talk to us about how their routine might change with a driverless vehicle, as opposed to the way they currently operate with multiple vehicles?
Sure. I'll give a really simple example for a household sharing one vehicle. It may turn out that the best scenario for certain households who have three or four vehicles would be to scale it down to two and devise some sharing scheme. But the simple example for a single vehicle would be, let's say, you have two spouses and, a child. The spouse number one can be to work by 8 a.m. The vehicle returns home. Assuming there's enough gap in between these trips, it could take the child to school and then return to, again, take the other spouse on some errands throughout the day, return in the afternoon to bring the child home, and then finally at the end of the day, pick up spouse A at work and bring them home. Now, this all assumes that there's sufficient gaps in between these trips, and that's part of the extreme hypothetical we talk about. We know for a lot of households, they have to drive in two separate directions too far away to make this feasible, but that would just be sort of one example of how you might use it.
But you're programming a car to drive automatically from one location after it's dropped off one spouse back to the house or back to some other location.
That's right. And that's just more something I think sort of in theory people would need to get used to, because in terms of its function, it's no different than having a passenger in it versus being empty. This car is moving itself from location A to location B. It's responsible for doing all it needs to do to get you there safely. And the car, for what it's worth, doesn't really care whether there's somebody inside or not. So, yeah, some of these trips would be moving unoccupied from one location to the next.
Brandon Shetley is our guest. Brandon's an employee. He's a project manager at the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. We're talking about some of the work he's done on driverless cars and smart cars here, cars that can communicate with each other and do all kinds of incredible things, which is a big project in Ann Arbor. Do we know how receptive the public is to this technology? This is such the paradigm shift. I imagine when you broach the topic of a driverless car with people, they might register some alarm. Do we know how the public feels about this idea, or is it just so far in the future that it's just getting talked about, or what?
Well, yeah, we do have an idea. Now, as you say, it is the reality of all of this really kind of coming completely into being. It is very far down the road, but we did a survey this past summer where we looked at the U.S. along with several other countries around the world. Actually, there was sort of surprising similarity from country to country. And what we found, especially for the U.S., was kind of a mixed message, but overall it was positive. People had positive initial opinions. They generally, without knowing too much about it, because nobody's really seen or used these vehicles, had high opinions and really felt that the benefits of the technology were something they felt were likely to occur, especially in terms of reducing the number of accidents and the severity of accidents. That was sort of highest on their list. They also, though, had some obvious concerns, ones that weren't too surprising to us, security, cybersecurity type concerns, data privacy, they don't want to be tracked. And surprisingly, too, one of the things they expressed some concern about was operating a vehicle without any controls or vehicles moving around unoccupied, which is what we're talking about here with level four. But at the end of the survey, the majority of the respondents we talked to said that they want to have this technology in their vehicle. They're looking forward to having it. And there's kind of a core group of people who are willing to pay, and they're willing to pay a fair amount to have the technology. So the final message was that there's certain concerns that I think need to be addressed, but the average driver is kind of excited about this and in a general sense really would like to see it on their vehicle.
We mentioned at the beginning the 32-acre driverless town on the outskirts of Ann Arbor that should be finished here this spring. Are you seeing this driverless town take shape?
I am. It's almost just out my window. It's almost due east of our building, a little northeast, and it has been taking shape over the past few months.
Where is that, Brandon?
We're in North Campus, University of Michigan's North Campus, and we're kind of at the far northeast corner of North Campus, so we're kind of out there in terms of the university's campus. But there's a new North Campus Research Complex. We're kind of at the south corner of that, and nestled in as much as 32 acres can be, is this kind of a big M-city, as some people have called it, taking place. You know, day by day, we're kind of seeing more streets and buildings and other things popping up. So,
well, it is possible to see the technology now that's kind of involved in this project. I'm looking at a photograph online here on the website fastcoexist.com. This is of a street sign in Ann Arbor, a Fuller Street, and affixed to the top of the sign is a device with a pair of antenna sticking out of it. Remind us of the scale of this project. How many smart vehicles will ultimately be deployed in Ann Arbor when this thing is up and running?
Sure. I'm not one of the people directly involved with making that safety pilot program I think you're referring to happen, where they're instrumenting vehicles, they're instrumenting infrastructure around the city of Ann Arbor. But in sort of big round numbers, I know they're kind of first wave where they were looking at somewhere in the ballpark of 3,000 vehicles having all this different instrumentation installed. Their next goal they're working on here is 9,000 vehicles, and I think ultimately they're trying to push it as high as 20,000 vehicles in and around Ann Arbor that have equipment installed. People come to Umtree, have the equipment installed by us. It does data collection and communication, other things like that, with either other vehicles or with the infrastructure around town. And part of the effort is a massive data collection effort to kind of take in all of this information that these vehicles are generating as they communicate with each other and drive around, and I guess figure out better ways to implement the connected vehicle and self-driving technology before it actually goes live on real vehicles.
In vehicles that can essentially communicate with each other. It's an extraordinary thing that's happening in Ann Arbor, and we will continue to keep an eye on it. We want to thank our guest. Brandon Shetley is a project manager at the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. Brandon, we'll probably have you back, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.